The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question or a comment for us, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. And now, here are Dave, Jeff, and another amazing guest on the Vet Tech Cafe.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe today. Dave, how are you doing? I know it's getting down to finals time for you and your students. How's that all going?
Oh, it's crunch time now. I'm getting finals ready. I'm teaching four classes, so I'm getting them all prepared. And this first part of the week is going to be all review for the final, and then those scary finals. They're all very nervous. I say, you guys have any questions about the exam? They're like, yeah, what's going to be on it? I'm like, that's not how this works. You have to study everything. I mean, they're in a stressful time right now, so they're getting through it, and it's coming up on Christmas time, so everyone's stressed about the holidays, stressed about finals. So it's a really tough time, but we see the light at the end of the tunnel, so it's a good thing.
Nice. And is this a group this is their first semester, or like is this their third semester and like they're going into their final semester next time and then they graduate, or kind of where are they at?
I have students from all areas of the program. So I have my medical terminology class. This is their second class ever.
Gotcha.
And I also have more advanced students that are just getting towards the end of it. And I also have a class that's in the middle of the thing. So I have students from all over the program.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I know one of the things we're going to talk about today with our guest, we'll talk about student chapters and some of the kind of the ins and outs of that in a little bit.
Yeah.
So why don't we go ahead and get started? Today, our guest is Ed Carlson. If you're not familiar with Ed, he is the Director of Technician Learning and Development for Ethos Veterinary Health. He lectures frequently on a variety of nutrition topics. We'll talk a little bit about that. And he serves on multiple NAVTA committees or the National Association for Veterinary Technicians in America, including the Veterinary Nurse Initiative Work Group. We'll talk a little bit about that. He's also the vice president of the Massachusetts Veterinary Technician Association, does some work with the New Hampshire Veterinary Technician Association, and is also a member of the Association of Veterinary Technician Educators. And he's most recently the recipient of the NAVTA 2019 Technician of the Year Award. Super cool. So, Ed, good morning. Thank you for coming by. How do you like your coffee?
Well, good morning. Thank you for asking me. I'm really very excited to be here. And, you know, I'm a Starbucks guy, I have to say. although I do have to register a complaint with them that recently they stopped making the latte macchiato, which had been my go-to. So now I have to have my latte, but I've got it set in the mobile app so that it's upside down. They put the espresso in after the milk. And that's as close as I can get to the latte macchiato that they used to have. So.
That's really specific.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I love the orders we get when we ask that question.
Yeah. Everyone is, like, I think, am I the only one that just drinks regular coffee with cream and sugar?
I'm just waiting for somebody to say, I just want black coffee.
Yeah. And we won't talk about what Jeff is drinking for coffee right now.
No, we certainly won't. Well, let's just say it's Christmas time and it might be a holiday-related flavor.
We'll leave it at that. So, Ed, one of the things that we like to bring to our listeners here is talking about people's different career paths. So when you and I first met, we met on the New Hampshire Veterinary Technician Association board, and you came in as the treasurer. And when they introduced you to me, I was like, oh, this guy has a really storied background, and he's been doing a lot of things. So why don't you tell our listeners about your career path and how you got to where you are today?
Oh, gosh. it's so hard to even think back that far, because if any of your listeners haven't been to one of my lectures or whatever, they don't realize like how old I really am, because I'm really pretty much older than dirt. So
we're all friends here, Ed. We're all old.
Yeah, you guys are mere spring chickens in comparison, I have to say. So look back on my career, and I'm terrible with dates and things like that. But I will say that 2 years ago, I was at the New England Veterinary Conference having lunch with some friends, and a veterinarian that I worked with fairly early on in my career came over and joined us, and we were chatting, and somebody said, gee, how long how long have you guys known each other? And you know, we looked at each other and, gee, I don't really know. And I said, well, Suzanne, how long have you been married? And she was like, 28 years. I said, okay, so we worked together over 30 years ago. So that was a very small clinic in upstate New Hampshire that really was my first venture into the veterinary space. And I learned pretty quickly that it wasn't really where I wanted to be. The medicine being practiced wasn't what I thought it should be. And even more so, the owner was an interesting individual. Let's just leave it at that.
We've all worked with interesting individuals like that.
Yep. And so I left there for a time. I managed a boarding kennel and pet supply store. Did not sell puppies or any animals like that, just supplies, and only worked part-time for a few years, part-time and per diem at another smaller but much better managed, much better medicine clinic down the street. And again, stayed friends with those individuals for a long time, and I run into them at VMX from time to time now is usually where I see them, because that was one of the things I did for a little while there. The owner, when it was a smaller practice, would take his entire staff to VMX, and I would take a week's vacation from where I was working at the time and go sit there and answer the phones and fill prescriptions and things like that. So then I came to what is now Ethos Veterinary Health. Ethos is an organization that's fairly new. It's only about, I guess, 3 or 4 years old, but it was four kind of like-minded organizations that came together to form a new organization. So at the time, it was the IVG network of hospitals that I came to work for in New England, and worked at a general practice that they owned at the time that they have since closed and merged into a different practice. Really, though, Ethos only has specialty and referral practices, other than two of the founding members have kind of these larger upscale general practices. But anyways, I worked primarily at one of these general practices and then emergency at a different facility that was a 24-hour emergency and critical care facility. Over time, I guess I really started to look at different career paths and career options just within the organization, and looking at getting older at this point, even thinking about, you know, am I going to continue on the floor as a technician? And really for quite a few years, because I've been, you know, with this organization going on 20 years now, that it really, there were so many options available to me, which has been really exciting, right? So I worked in, you know, as I said, general practice, I worked in emergency, then was the first technician supervisor for the organization.
Oh, okay.
And I actually managed the technicians at two hospitals for a while, which was not an easy task, as you might imagine. And then over time, I started moving into more of a management type of role and ended up being asked to manage one of their facilities. I did that for a few years. And while I was doing that and not working on the floor, I began to realize a couple of things about myself. One, that management really wasn't for me, that I didn't feel like I really was passionate about it, and I really wasn't good at it, and that I wanted to do something different. So really the crux to my saying, I'm not going to do this job anymore, was kind of leaving, getting ready to leave one day. And as I walked through the treatment areas, I was saying goodbye to people and just checking on things, you know, as a manager often does at the end of their day. Just knew something was up. You could have that vibe or that feel that what's going on in here? We're not really happy. And so turned out that, you know, the team that was on for the evening had seen that there was a foreign body surgery, potential foreign body surgery coming in. The technician that was the most seasoned with anesthesia and would generally be the go-to on that shift to take this to surgery had called out, and
was
freaking out a little bit. Right?
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? You guys can do this. It's not difficult, and I know that you're skilled technicians, but there was that fear of the unknown or whatever, and kind of not having that security blanket. And they said, you know what, I'll stay, and you guys can do it, but you know, I'll be here to really help you through. And that's when I really realized that I miss teaching, and I miss the interaction with technicians on the floor. And so it was soon after that that I said, okay, I'm not going to do this management gig anymore. I'll kind of hang out while you're finding somebody else, but want to do something different. I guess it was also good timing in that hospital at the time didn't have an internal medicine service, and we had been interviewing internists to add on internal medicine to that facility. And so I had decided, as I was thinking about what am I going to do next, that medicine was something that I wanted to do. It was going to be similar in many of the same skills that I was going to need and so much of the same knowledge that I would need. However, there are going to be a lot of things that I didn't know, equipment I hadn't used and things like that. So it seemed like a good way to kind of get the juices going again on learning for myself as well as helping to teach others. And so I proposed that to the leadership there, saying that, you know, I feel like having managed this hospital and developed relationships with many of the hospitals in the area that refer to us, this would be an ideal pairing for me to be the tech supervisor of the new IM department, because we're bringing in this internist who hasn't worked for the organization, so she doesn't know our ways and computer systems or the referring community where I do. And so that worked out really well. That was when I did my BTS in nutrition, and because I learned very quickly that nutrition being so vital to these internal medicine patients, as well as any patient, that was something that I could really do to help expedite our appointments and really be helpful to the internist I was working with. And then partway through that career path, an opening came in our learning and development department here at Ethos. And so, and again, it was still before Ethos was formed. So I became the technician learning and development specialist, and worked primarily at a desk, but still doing, you know, some hands-on training and that type of thing. And then that eventually morphed into, once Ethos was formed, that I now had a larger role as a regional technician learning development manager. And then within the last couple of years is when I've moved into a national role as the director of technician learning development for the 25 hospitals that we have.
Wow, 25.
Wow, I didn't know there was that many.
Yeah.
You know, Ed, you said early on there, you know, thinking back to how long ago you started, it reminded me of a funny story. When I still lived in Southern California, this was probably 7 or 8 years ago, I worked relief for a local neurologist. I had some friends there, and if somebody was on vacation or what have you, I would fill in while they were out. And they had just hired a new doctor, and she had been there maybe a month or two, and I recognized the name, and I couldn't place it. And then I realized we went to high school together, and not only did we go to high school together, she was a year behind me in school, and we didn't run in the same circles, but I certainly knew who she was. Here now, she had gone off to vet school, done a rotating internship, done a residency, and is now a boarded neurologist, and I'm her technician. I remember thinking to myself, well, thank you for making me realize what I haven't done with my life. but it's something I'll never forget. And I'm sure she doesn't even remember now. But Dr. Dillard, if you're listening, I still laugh about that.
That's great.
But the other question I have, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I guess kind of similarly, you know, I mentioned that, you know, for a time there, I was managing a pet supply store and boarding kennel. And we had a young lady that, while she was in high school, before she actually went off to college, that worked for us and then came back while she was going to college to kind of doing the whole pre-vet thing for a while, and would come back during the summers to work for us. And now, you know, I ran into her not that many years ago at a veterinary conference. And, you know, now she's a veterinarian with a couple of kids and whatever. And, you know, I remember when she worked for me when she was in high school. So
no, that's great.
The other thought I had was something you mentioned, and I think it really resonates with me as well, is, you know, the idea of, you know, you having been a technician and kind of getting promoted to management and going through the realization that you're just not a, you know, you don't have the passion for management. I know I don't either. I know that I'm not a good manager of people. And I think that's something that's really relevant because so many people start out as technicians and then so many just ultimately get promoted to a head tech or a lead tech or whatever the name is in that particular environment. And they don't necessarily love it. They don't necessarily have the training for it. And they're trying to wear that hat, but probably still have to work full time on the floor. And it's just, it's a terrible way to do it. And it just, so many of us, I don't think actually realize that's just, that's not our thing.
Right. Right. No, exactly. And that it's okay for it not to be our thing.
Right.
But I guess what I would say to those individuals that are trying to find their path, you know, I don't regret at all taking on that position, even though, again, I feel like it wasn't for me and really I didn't do a great job at it. And that's one of those circular kind of things that you really don't have a passion for something. So you're kind of going through the motions and then you kind of realize that it really isn't for you, or maybe you haven't got to that point yet, but you start to see or think, I'm not doing as well as I could here. And again, right. many of us, especially that go on to specialize in that kind of thing, are somewhat perfectionists. And so when we're not doing something really, really well, then that really eats at us. And I know that really bothered me. And I will say that I do feel like many veterinary organizations or veterinary practices, you know, their thought process, like, is in many ways is in the right place, that here is a technician that we see a lot of potential in. And so we want to reward that and we want to utilize them better within our practice. So let's make them a manager. And people have to stop and think about that just because you are the most skilled technician or have the best communication skills with your doctors and your clients doesn't mean that you're going to be a good manager necessarily. Right.
Yeah, I had that issue as well. When I first moved down here to North Carolina, came down as the technician supervisor for the second shifters. And I realized, I mean, it took me almost a year to realize this, is that I don't like this job. Yeah. I don't like being the person that has to be in charge. I have my VTS in emergency critical care. I want to treat animals. I don't want to treat technicians. And it was hard for me to step back from that and say, this is not what I want to do. I want to do this. Like you said, getting the right people. And we talked about this with David Liss last episode, is getting the right people in the right seats. And it's not always like the most experienced technician needs to be in that role. Sometimes it's someone that has a good leadership skill that can do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't need to be a technician at all, right?
Right.
So, and that's something else that, again, I think we've kind of fallen into a little bit of a trap of, you know, kind of this promotion from within sometimes. But don't get me wrong, I think that's a great thing to do if it's the right person for the right role, as you said, getting the right person in the right seat. But and the other part, I think, though, is for your listeners, is that, one, if you're that technician that is moving into another role, remember that you have to advocate for yourself. And by advocating for yourself, you're also advocating for your team. If you're moving into a role and not getting the training or education you need to be able to do really well, I mean, try and really think about the things that you could improve on or that you feel like, I don't know enough about. Put together a list and go to whoever you report to and say, okay, I need help with these things. And that's okay. And then the other part of that being that when you do decide that this really isn't for me, sometimes what I see, and for whatever reason, maybe it's the individual or maybe it's the company that they're working for, that person leaves that organization and goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be either. I mean, I will say, when I said, I don't want to be the hospital manager here anymore, there was some concern from the regional leadership in our conversations about, well, do you want to transfer to a different hospital? And I was like, no, I really love this hospital and the people that I work with here. And I get what you're saying, that, you know, I'm basically stepping down from something. And so is that going to be looked at in some way as a failure? And I think in many people's eyes, they feel like that's, you know, I would be a failure, so I'm leaving to go someplace else rather than say I failed.
Right.
And to me, being able to say to the people that I worked with, you know what, I tried this. It was a great learning experience. I know I'm not doing a good job at it. I need to do something else. And this is what I want to do with you. I think that in many ways that did gain me more respect with some of my peers at that facility.
Nice. Well, and you also get that respect of that self-awareness of saying, hey, I'm not doing a good job at this.
Right.
And I'm a good technician. I'm a good employee, but this job is not for me. And
right.
And being able to step back from that, I feel like I got more respect by stepping down from my supervisor role, because people realize that if you're not happy, don't keep doing it.
Right.
And that's going to benefit the hospital. If the person that's doing that job is not happy doing that job, then somebody else needs to do that job.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, Ed, you have your VTS in nutrition. Were you a charter member of that?
I was not. I believe I was the first. I was in the group that did the first exam.
The first exam. Okay. Yeah. So I know, you know, some of these VTSs have very different requirements in that. Like, is there anything from that process that kind of stands out to you that was like really difficult about VTS and nutrition, or anything that maybe a different door has opened for you, or anything that kind of stands out from that process?
No, I think the process was fairly standard from what the other VTS academies do. And I did do a little bit of research about that, I guess. And honestly, as much as I really love nutrition and do feel like it's the best academy out there completely, everyone knows that, it wasn't necessarily my first thought. But as I started to research a little bit more, and as I said, as I started working in medicine more, I found myself really being drawn to it. And I guess that is the thing that, again, I need to just tell everyone that's even thinking about doing their VTS, is it really does need to be something that you are passionate about and you want to do for yourself, right? And to help your patients.
Gotcha. Maybe you, instead of management, maybe you should do advertising.
Maybe.
Well, I guess my question is, you have a skills list, I'm assuming, correct?
Sure. Yeah.
And what type of skills did you have to have? Like, so besides placing NG tubes and
yeah, you know, placing NG tubes, managing NG tubes, you know, managing any of the tubes, right? Placing central lines, you know, all of those more advanced things that you think about, but also, you know, nutritional calculations is a huge one as well, which, believe it or not, there are people in this world who don't like math. And so some people just freak out with that, right?
Yeah.
And so, and that's one of the things I like about the VTS in nutrition is that, you know, while there are advanced skills that are involved in that, you can do those things in most hospital settings, but that is something that I find can be a stumbling block for individuals who want to pursue the VTS in nutrition. In, you know, so many of the smaller practices or general practices don't do as much with feeding tubes or, you know, advanced catheters and those types of things. So I advise people when I start helping to mentor anyone, or even anyone that comes up to me at a conference and says, hey, I want to learn more about this, is to, you know, take that skills list and kind of highlight, these are the things we don't do here or don't do very often, and see, am I going to fall within 80% of the skills or how many of these do I absolutely have to do to be able to at least meet that threshold? And then going again to whoever it is that makes the decisions at your practice and say, hey, this is what I want to do and this is why. And here's some things that we need to try and help me with to be able to do so that I'm going to qualify even to take this exam. And I've found that many, many organizations are more than happy to work with people in that way. But you have to really advocate for yourself again, right?
That's true. I've in my classes that I've been teaching, I always tend to highlight nutrition, because I say nutrition is like the forgotten skill of veterinary technicians, you know, because they don't realize it. Nutrition helps with healing, it helps with well-being, it helps with protein loss and things like that. And they're like, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. So I think nutrition is really important. How big is the VTS in nutrition? Like, you and I think there's one other person that I know of that's a VTS in nutrition. How many are there?
Currently, there are 18.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
I know. That's really great.
That's really great.
So, and I will say that we also are international. Not only do we have members from Canada, but we also have members in the UK and an Australian member as well.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
That's great. So, Ed, you've been involved in the National Association of Veterinary Technicians in America, NAVTA, for a number of years. Just briefly talk, well, actually, you don't have to be brief. We have no time limits. What are some of the benefits of being a NAVTA member?
You know, I think it really is advocating for yourself, but more so advocating for the profession. So really, our profession, whether we want to think of it this way or not, really is in its infancy. It really hasn't been that many years when you think about it that there has been organized veterinary medicine that has involved the technical team. Not with a good career path, not with kind of that educational role and all of those things involved. And so I really feel like by being part of the national organization, yes, what's in it for me is what many times people are thinking about. And so, yes, there's kind of those discounts that you can get on certain things and whatnot. But to me, it's more about having your voice heard and helping to pave the way for others coming through the kind of growing through the profession.
Gotcha. What are some of the challenges that NAVTA faces? Because I'm on the board for the California RVT Association. Mm-hmm. I know you do a lot of work with state organizations as well. And I think one of the biggest things we have is just getting membership and getting the word out. And California is a pretty vast state. And I think we have maybe in the order of, say, 6 or 8,000 credentialed technicians, but we can't even get to 1,000 members. Is that a struggle for NAVTA as well?
Yeah, I think that it really is. And, you know, some of this is a little bit difficult for, you know, not being currently on the board to really have much of the insight.
Sure.
To some of that. But from past experience and just from organizations, as you talk about in general, I do think that that is difficult. And I've heard, and I haven't done the research on this, so I guess I can't quote it or whatever, but it really seems like people wanting to belong to organizations, that seems to be falling off, and not just in the veterinary industry, but just in general population, if you will. And so if that's true, then I don't think that it's unusual for us to be seeing those things, and everyone gets so busy, you know. I know for many years, I was working as a technician when I wasn't involved, even with my state organization, even though I belonged, you know, and some of that is because life gets in the way, right? And as you're younger, it's more things going on sometimes. And sometimes there's not finances to be able to, you know, take some time away from work or travel someplace or whatever it is. So I think that can be challenging as well. And I think all of the organizations need to think about how can we be sustainable and what is it that's going to keep us moving forward and how can we attract new members. I am really excited that the NAFTA Leadership Conference that is coming up in a few weeks in Chicago in conjunction with the AVMA's Veterinary Leadership Conference. Our program at the NAFTA event really is focused on organizations and trying to better your organization and how to do those types of things.
So. I've learned that you are now going to be the president of NAFTA starting in January, I believe. Is that correct?
Well, I'll be the president-elect.
President-elect. Okay.
Right.
So what are some of the things that you want to accomplish during your time at the top?
Whew, that's another hard question, right? when you think about it, I've been trying to put it together my list a little bit. But I feel like being president-elect is really that first year to get your feet wet a little bit more and really see what's going on within the organization. So for me, the things that come to top of mind are the Veterinary Nurse Initiative and technician utilization. I think those are things that we really need to continue to move forward, as well as the whole wellness movement for, you know, again, not wellness for our veterinary patients, which of course we need to be concerned about, but more so wellness for the whole veterinary team. And honestly, I think those three things are so intertwined and such a huge, huge endeavor for any and all of them that that's something that is really going to take a long period of time, but I want to try and help move those things forward. And over the next year, again, as you know, being the president-elect and being on the board, learning more about the roadmap that has been set up through strategic planning and things for the board and for NAFTA so that we can try to move things forward. You know, a few years ago, and I don't remember when it was now, I was the one of the members at large and sat on the NAFTA board for 2 years and then decided not to run for another office for a while I had other things going on, as well as trying to get more involved with some of the committees, including what at the time was the National Credential Task Force, which kind of preceded the VNI. Those were things that I was really passionate about, so I wanted to more specialize my the time that I did have, I guess, in those arenas. So you know, ask me again in 6 or 8 months of what I want to do the year of my presidency, and I might have a more succinct answer for you.
How's well, that? We hope we're still here in 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, and if
well,
so,
of course
it
you will
like,
be.
And it sounds like you want to come back by and have another cup of coffee. So we'll definitely do that. So you mentioned the Veterinary Nurse Initiative, the VNI. Let's talk a little bit about that. So, I mean, obviously, I think we can all agree a fairly polarizing topic in our field right now. And, you know, I do think, you know, there's a lot of great things. And Dave and I have talked about it a little bit, you know, like where even we stand. And we've said a number of times, it seems like every episode now we say this, we didn't really want to get into such deep topics right off the top, but here we go again. So, you know, for our listeners out there that maybe haven't heard of the Veterinary Nurse Initiative, the VNI, talk a little bit about what it is, why it's important to you, why it's important to technicians in our profession, and what its goals are and where it's headed.
Been involved with it for so long, it's almost difficult for me to even think back to, gee, would somebody not have heard of this? But I suppose there may be those individuals, right? So really, the Veterinary Nurse Initiative, the goals are to standardize our credential under one uniform credential across the country, or at least one uniform term, right? And I guess I have to be careful about the words that I select, because we're not saying that we want there to be, like you apply to NAFTA to be a registered veterinary nurse and you get your credential at a national level. No, it's still going to be at the state level. And so really the goals though are to standardize the scope of practice, standardize credentialing requirements, you know, from state to state on both of those things, so that we do have that one unified title across all of the states, and then looking to, you know, title protection and proper use of that title. Along with all of those things really does come utilization, which I know we can talk about as well maybe in a few minutes. And so why are we doing this? So this is something that has been coming for a really long time. And as I did some research for the AVMA's Technician Utilization Task Force, looking back, there have been, since 1991, surveys done of NAFTA members about should we consider using this term instead of technician. So this isn't something that has happened overnight.
Right.
And no. The reasons for thinking about, one of the many, many reasons for thinking about this change, is really about how do we, again, move the profession forward when we're losing technicians to other fields.
Right.
And why are we losing them? And from going back as far as 1991 up through the demographic survey that was done in 2016 by NAFTA, low wage, lack of respect, lack of reciprocity from state to state, the value of the credentialing and poor utilization of our profession, those have been the reasons that we're losing individuals and the common themes that we've been looking at and talking about as an organization.
Yeah, and here we are 20 years later, and
yeah.
I think the results of a survey today would largely be the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so don't get me wrong, I'm not looking back at, gee, 1991, we were talking about this, why didn't NAFTA do something about that?
Oh, sure.
You know, again, that was really in the infancy of veterinary technology and of NAFTA in many ways. And so there's been a lot of changes over the years. And that really, it just resonates with me that we've been having this same discussion for so long. It really is time to do something about it.
And I guess the question is, how does that happen? How do we make that happen? Do you have to go to each individual state? Like, do you have to go to all 50 states and say, hey, this is what we want to do. We want you to change your standards and protocols?
Yeah, you actually do, right? And so, again, that's one of the things that when I've done some presentations about the VNI, what I try to bring forward to people are, do you really understand where we are as a profession with our credentials? So 19 states have certified veterinary technicians. Some of those, as you know, Dave, from New Hampshire and all of the New England states that have, you know, that CVT title, that's a voluntary title in many states that is done through the Technician Association. However, there are also states where being a certified veterinary technician is a state requirement and done through a state organization. So LVT, licensed veterinary technician, there's 14 states that use that credential. Registered veterinary technician, there's 15 states. There's only one state, Tennessee, that uses licensed veterinary medical technician. And then there's even a state that doesn't have any type of credentialing available to technicians.
What state is that?
Utah, right?
Is it Utah? Yeah.
Then couple that with, from looking at state requirements, 42 states of the 50 states require that to be credentialed, you're a graduate of an AVMA-accredited program.
Right. Wow, it's 42 states now.
42 states, right? Wow. How many states require the VTNE? 48. It's not all 50. Right.
It's not all 50.
So what really has resonated with me as I've done more research and gotten more involved is that while our profession has grown in many ways, as I believe all medical professions, both human and animal, have, whether we're talking about doctors, nurses, dentists, dental hygienists, veterinarians, they all started off with really people just saying, well, someone's sick, we're going to try and help them. And really just kind of learning as they went. And then there was on the job training and learning of all of those professions. And then at some point with all of those professions, it went away from just being kind of an apprenticeship type of thing to, hey, we have some organized education around how to do this. And those other groups have all over the years at different times decided that to practice as whatever this is, this profession is, you need to graduate from a program that teaches this and you need to take a national exam. And so currently in so many of our states for veterinary technology or veterinary nursing, that isn't the case. And so really, I think there's really no comparable medical profession where a college degree, passing a national exam and maintaining a license of some sort is optional. And so why should it be with ours?
Yeah. Right. I think that's one thing that resonates for me is, so I, you know, from California, I was an alternate route student. And at the time, I didn't really understand what the difference was. The school certainly didn't teach it to me and didn't really have any understanding what the differences might be in terms of what I could do with my career or not. And I think about that now, and I taught at that school for 6 or 7 years. And I think for me, I would love to see a time where every credentialed veterinary technician, whatever their title be, has gone through the same education and holds the same credential, whatever that is, you know, a two-year AVMA accredited program and whatever the title is.
Yep.
You know, will there be a time in the future where everybody is on the same page? And more than anything, I think that's what I want to see come out of it. That, you know, call me whatever you want to call me. But I just, I think that that standardization, you know, is kind of.
That's kind of where I stand, too, is I don't care what you call me, but everyone should have the same knowledge base.
Right. Yeah, and I really agree with that. And again, you know, I come from an alternative path as well. And so I tell people all the time when I'm doing these talks for the VNI or just talking to people in general that I would definitely do things differently with, you know, graduating from an accredited program if I wasn't so freaking old. but, you know, at this point, that's not going to happen, right? But definitely back in the day when I started working as a veterinary technician, which I know some people would say, well, you still aren't a technician because you didn't graduate from a program, even though you're credentialed, you're really an assistant. And so there's that whole thought right now about, you know, who's what? And that is so confusing within our own profession as just veterinary technicians. Veterinarians many times do not understand all of this either, and which is in many ways not surprising if we don't all understand it ourselves. And then from that, you know, how do we expect the public to understand the differences as well? So in all those other medical type professions that I've talked about, again, there was that time when they said, okay, now here is what the standard needs to be moving forward. And they then each state decided on their own, what does that mean for the people that are currently working in this profession, whether they are credentialed with some type of alternate pathway, are they not credentialed, but they have been, you know, doing this job for 20 20 years or whatever, are we going to say that they can't any longer? And then what does that look like? And so that's why this is going to be such a huge undertaking. So I agree completely that we need to be at a place where moving forward, anyone gaining a credential in every state needs to meet that same standard.
Right.
But the reality, as much as some of us or some others may want to say, the people who are either not credentialed and working in a capacity, or those people who are credentialed but did that through an alternate pathway, that they can't exist any longer. That's just not realistic.
Right.
Not only is it not fair to those individuals and them earning a living, but it also would cripple the profession,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
hospitals
absolutely.
Would have to either close or break the law, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And we've talked about that, where the task force is, the technicians in the field is not sufficient. So if you're going to take out half of them because they're not credentialed, then the whole profession fails.
Right. And so, but there we go with that whole round robin kind of thing, in that, yes, we continue to lose individuals, so
right.
We don't have enough people to fill the slots. But part of that really is because we don't have a credential and standards that people have to meet in all states to do that, to continue to move our profession forward.
Yeah.
Really, if we need to really embrace that, we do need to all stand together, whether it's behind the name or just behind everything else that the VNI stands for, to say, we need to help move this profession forward. And while looking to, because I hear all the time, you know, why isn't the ABMA doing something about this? Or why isn't NAFTA doing more about this? Or, you know, why isn't my state association or whatever? So all of those things, we all need to work together, but we all need to be behind that as well. It's not going to just happen overnight. And in many ways, I feel like while we do definitely need the help and support of, you know, our veterinary colleagues, again, this is our profession. It's a different profession than
right.
the veterinarian.
Yeah.
And so we need to be responsible for it.
Yeah. How do you feel about where the VNI is at right now? Does it have like good momentum? We're kind of, I know you said earlier you have to like work in all of these individual states, kind of where is it at right now, or how's it going?
I think that it's going well, and I'm sure that if you, you know, as many different people as you ask, you will get many different answers to that question, right? So part of the reason that I think there's a lot of misconception about the VNI is that the original goals, which are still the goals as far as I know, was to start with states where basically we're asking to change the credential or the terminology from veterinary technician to veterinary nurse, and has everything else already in place that the VNI is looking to have be part of what supports that credential. So
gotcha.
That means graduating from an accredited program, passing the VTNE. There's a scope of practice that is designed, is set up within the laws of that state, and the proper use of the title, so title protection as well. And so, and again, right or wrong, and people, you know, have varying opinions about this, this kind of the method that is being utilized, the thought being that if we can have just a couple of states make that change so that RVN is an actual credential rather than a proposed, then it will gradually be easier for other states. And as you go into other states that potentially need to actually have our profession written into their laws, let's say, that's a bigger project.
Yeah.
So, and it's going to be slow. I mean, really, when this initially started, we thought, oh, this is going to be at least a 10-year project. Well, some people said this is going to be a 10-year project. I continued to say this is going to be at least a 20-year project. So I think that, you know, only being a couple of years into it, we're doing okay. And it's not surprising to me that we haven't had, you know, a victory, so to speak, yet in having one state change, because the legislature is very slow. And overworked many times. There's so many other things. And so vaping is a great example, right? Where here in Massachusetts, we went to a hearing about a bill that we have as a veterinary technician association before the legislature. And at the same time, there were some laws around vaping that were being introduced. And we still haven't heard from that committee that our bill is in about whether that's going to be approved to move forward within the process or not. But yet already, vaping is being outlawed here in Massachusetts. So the sale of those products, right? So it, because so many people are dying from it or having diseases from it and all of these different things. So really when there's something like that, it tends to take precedent and through no fault of whatever the initiative is moving forward, it doesn't always move forward as quickly as we would like.
Ed, one last thing we kind of want to talk about is this AVMA Veterinary Technician Utilization Task Force. I had not heard of this until I read through your bio and I was like, oh, what is this thing? So I kind of did a little research on it, read through it, and it sounds fantastic. And I'm actually really encouraged that the fact that the AVMA is taking care of this. This is not something that us as technicians are taking head on. It's something that we have the AVMA involved in. So I feel like that's going to give it a lot more traction. So can you briefly just describe the Vet Tech Utilization Task Force for us?
Sure. So the AVMA's House of Delegates is my understanding that had said to basically their board of directors, we have a problem with losing technicians from the field. And we hear that there's something about utilization that may be part of that. And so we need to really take a look at this. And so AVMA did decide that they were going to fund this task force to come together to really look at this problem and make recommendations. And so they put together a group of individuals. There were people from the AVMA's Committee on Veterinary Technician Education and Activities, representative from the Veterinary Hospital Managers Association, representatives from the AAVSB, the AVMA Council on Veterinary Services. There was a NAFTA member, credentialed technician. There was a board member from NAFTA. There was a representative from the NAFTA's Committee on Veterinary Technician Specialists, and my role on that task force was there was a veterinarian from the Association of Veterinary Technician Educators, and it was led by a member of the AVMA House of Delegates, Stephen Streep, DVM. Basically coming together to look at, are we correct that technicians are not being utilized appropriately? We had to talk about that, even though everybody's like, well, duh, we know that, but let's look at that in a little bit more context. And then what are the barriers to technicians being utilized appropriately? How can we try to go about making change? And what are some recommendations that we might have? And so we did every other week conference calls for probably about 4 months with our, all of us having our homework and sometimes splitting into smaller groups. And then we also had a 2-day in-person meeting at the AVMA headquarters. And along with those individuals that were actually on the task force, I should mention also, we did have a member of the AVMA's board that was kind of our term was that they had used for him, but basically as an advisor. And a couple of other individuals from AVMA's, not only leadership, but their support team that were there that were to help with facilitating things and did not have, a vote on the committee or whatnot, but more as, advisory. And so we really look back at so many documents that have, again, been looked at over the years and different studies that have been done. We reached out to probably 150 other individuals, each of us on the task force putting together a list of 10 to 20 people that we wanted to reach out to with kind of a questionnaire to take. It wasn't a survey, but more like a focus group, right? Rather than getting everyone together or interviewing them in person, we kind of did it on paper to make sure we weren't missing anything. And I really don't think we were missing anything. We all kind of know the issues, but what was, again, really interesting to me was helping to educate even some of the veterinarians that were were on the task force about some of the issues that we see and why. And so what's happening with this now is we put together extensive report. I don't remember how many pages it was, but it was huge. that was being sent to the AVMA board, or already has been. Our deadline was a few weeks ago to be able to have the board review that before they would make a recommendation as to should this go back to the House of Delegates in January, and then we'll see what happens from there. But what I don't want people to take away from the fact that this task force was put together, this task force originally, again, was put together to define the problem, make recommendations, hand that back to the AVMA, and say, okay, now what are you going to do with this? Right. Or what are they, right? And so we weren't charged with making all of these changes, because the roadmap we put together for change, of course, involves the AVMA, but it involves a number of other organizations as well. It's again going to be a huge undertaking.
And from what I understand from reading into the website, this task force just got created like in April of this year. Is that correct?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It's relatively new.
Yes. Yeah. But again, we've basically the task force was formed probably, like you say, in April. Again, I'm terrible with dates and times.
That's okay.
and really, we had our orders that if we wanted to have this looked at January at the Veterinary Leadership Conference of the AVMA, that really mid-November-ish is when we had to have our recommendations in. So actually, that was the charge of the task force. So I'm not sure that the task force exists at this point, right?
Okay. But somebody's doing something about the problem that we've known for quite a few years. And I think it's really great that AVMA is getting involved in trying to come up with solutions for things, even if it's just in the recommendation phase of things, which I think is great.
I will say that I really felt very charged with how the whole task force experience went, how we ended up, and really, again, working doing teleconferencing and email and, you know, group chats and all of those kinds of things was great. But again, getting together with kind of finalizing things and trying to put together, what we've all been working on and discussing that over a couple of days, so that over the next month or so, there were a number of people working on actually putting together the report and sending it back to the group to review. That being in person with some many individuals you don't know, including some of the AVMA leadership, was very energizing. And it also was great to see the support that we were receiving. I really feel like the individuals from the AVMA that were involved with helping us through this process were very much supportive of, and in some ways very surprised with, some of the things that really are problems within our industry. And really, we identified as well not all of the things that really are a problem for technicians, but also how this affects veterinarians, not only from a financial aspect, but also, you know, can you even tie this into the terrible suicide rates that we have and things like that, yeah. Both in the technician world as well as the veterinarians, you know? So I really do feel like coming together can only make things better.
That's yeah, great. For sure. And I think that that's a really important thought, just coming together and having discussions and starting from somewhere. I mean, we've talked about that the last couple of weeks with a number of different topics. Just
sure.
It can't be so overwhelming that you just never start. You just have
yeah,
to start.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere.
Somewhere.
Exactly.
And so, well, I think we're just about out of time today. I don't want to take any more of your precious time. I know you're a busy man, but I do want to ask you one last question.
Uh-oh.
Completely random and it's open-ended, but what item would you seriously stockpile if you found out whoever makes this item were not going to produce it anymore?
Coffee.
That's a fantastic answer.
Perfect.
I would have to say it definitely has to be coffee. I mean, I think it all the time. I'm, you know, sitting in the morning, having a cup of coffee, trying to get ready for my day, and I think, oh, I don't know what I would do without this.
So, that
it's I'm so telling true. You, Ed, advertising, you're at some point, maybe down the road, we can bring you on as a paid spokesman for Vet Tech Cafe, because coffee is so vital.
It really
definitely is.
Definitely. That was a great answer. All right, Ed. Well, thank you so much for being on the Vet Tech Cafe. We learned a lot today, and I hope our listeners did too. We learned a lot about NAFTA. We learned a lot about the Veterinary Nurse Initiative. I think that's been really great to hear, and it's been great talking to you. It's been a few years since you and I have talked, so it's great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for being on the Vet Tech Cafe today.
And I hope that somewhere down the road, maybe as you are in the president-elect seat or, actually the active president, we'd love to chat with you again and kind of see where things are at in comparison to now and kind of see where it's headed, if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back and chat more. And I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be involved in your podcast. And it's been very exciting. So and I really enjoyed the one that I did listen to so far with Liz. And so I'm looking forward to David's coming out as well, so I can listen to that and then think, crap, I know I need to redo mine.
Well, we'd be happy to have you on again.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, absolutely. All right. Thanks
Ed. Ed.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
You too. Dave and Jeff would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As we talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by Dave, Jeff, or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.